Welcome to NHL Draft Class. We are recording this on November 18th. I am Adam Kimmelman, here with my over-caffeinated, as always, colleague Mike Morial. Mike, how are you?
Very good. Pumpkin spice, sweet cream, cold brew. Are you kidding me?
Do you trip over people climbing on that pumpkin bandwagon, or do you just claw your way right through the crowd?
Clawing through. And that was one of four this morning.
Wow.
That was good.
I'm a little lost for word. Four. I would make that stunt your growth joke, but...
No, don't even go there.
It's a good thing this isn't a video one.
Our fans have had it with those jokes.
Yeah. Well, all right, so today we're back. It's been a little while, so we're going to get to Brad McEwen from Hockey Canada, the head scout. He's going to talk about the Canada-Russia series, which just finished up a couple days ago out with Team WHL against Russia, the end of the six-game series. But since we last spoke, we got to talk about Jim Gregory, the great Jim Gregory, Hockey Hall of Famer Jim Gregory, who unfortunately we lost on October 30th at age 83. Jim's hockey resume goes all the way back to the 1960s. When he won the Memorial Cup as GM of the St. Michael's Majors in 61, coach and GM of the Toronto Marlboros and won it in 64 and 67, GM of the Leafs from 69 to 79, one of the first managers to bring over European players, including Leafs legend and Hall of Famer Börje Salming. He joined the NHL in 1979 to run NHL Central Scouting, which ties it into the draft. In 1986, he was promoted to Executive Director of Hockey Operations, later became a Senior Vice President of the league. Jim also served as chairman of the Hockey Hall of Fame Selection Committee from 1998 to 2014, with the exception of 2007, which also was the year he went into the Hall of Fame. Very well deserved, along with Ron Francis, Al MacInnis, Mark Messier, and Scott Stevens, one of the better Hockey Hall classes we've had. Jim Gregory's legacy will be the many lives he touched at the NHL level and around the world. Mike, you know, Jim had an office in the Toronto office for a long time. I knew him. You knew him a little bit better than I did. What are some of the memories you have of Jim?
Yeah, well, the memories that run deepest to me are when I attended those final meetings, right, Adam? And you were there, too, those first three, 4 years when Jim always used to come in. From 2009 through last April, whenever I attended those final meetings in Toronto, it was always special to see Mr. Gregory enter the room during the heated discussions and remind everyone just how lucky they were to be doing such a wonderful job. And he just kind of lightened up the room. He'd always come over to me and say, hey, what's going on? You know, what's going on in the, you know, print world? And what are you guys up to? And we'd always talk, and we'd share a few laughs. You know, I'd ask questions about all the dignitaries in the pictures on the walls in the boardroom. And he'd give me countless stories of yesteryear. He'd always have goodies with him, too, in his pocket, like whether it be some type of candy, and he'd share it with everyone, all the scouts. I know Peter Sullivan's favorite candy was Snickers, and Mr. Gregory would always have a Snickers bar there for Peter Sullivan, and he'd always invite us to Blue Jays games or Maple Leafs games. And the thing about it, Adam, too, and, you know, he treated me like, you know, I was just like one of the guys. And that's something I'll always remember and treasure and be grateful for. And as everyone has been talking about Mr. Gregory and his life and his legacy, you know, it really is the fact that no one had any bad thing to say about Mr. Gregory and what he meant to them and how special he was as a person to them.
He was everybody's favorite grandfather. Mm. That's the best way. And with his passing, I think the league lost a little of its soul and a little bit of its smile without Jim Gregory not being with us anymore. But we're going to talk to Mike Zeisberger, our colleague at NHL.com. Mike covered the memorial service for Jim. Mike, how are you? Thank you for joining us on NHL Draft Class.
Well, it's always a pleasure, guys. And, you know, anytime. Love talking pucks with you guys.
Zeiss, you've been around the game at all levels for many years. There are very few people, especially at the NHL level, that you never hear a bad word about. Jim Gregory was one of maybe the only person that nobody ever had a bad word to say about them.
No, you know what? And I think I've been trying to think of the best way to kind of symbolize what Mr. Gregory is about. And you'll notice that I call him Mr. And I've known him for a long time. Very few people. You know, I've covered a lot of sports over the years, dating back to the Toronto Sun and There's three people that I've ever called Mr. to this day when I into my 50s. Mr. Béliveau for Jean Béliveau, Mr. Nicholas for Jack Nicholas, and these are interviews with them, and Mr. Gregory. And, you know, I'd see him in the NHL office in Toronto. I mean, that he had his own office there, obviously. And I'd always say, "How you doing, Mr. Gregory?" And he had that trademark, easy with the Mr. stuff. he'd always say that. But, no, I think the biggest symbol for Mr. Gregory and the respect that he had is that, a couple of Saturdays ago, was his funeral, and not only the amount of people that came in for it, guys. I mean, you know, three rows in front of me, Brendan Shanahan, Kenny Holland, Steve Yzerman. Now, those guys had games, okay? Their teams had games that night. Shanahan's one thing, Leafs are playing in Toronto. But Kenny Holland and, Yzerman, they took time out from their team schedules, and it was never an issue with them that they wouldn't come. John Davidson came, obviously the president of the New York Rangers. We can go down the list. But when Mr. Gregory's son finished the eulogy, and he did not talk about hockey, he talked about the person that his dad was. He talked about incidents like, after every draft, and Lord knows the three of us have covered a lot of them, after the draft would be over, Mr. Gregory would be on the draft floor collecting pens and notepads. You know what he would do with those guys? He would go to schools that maybe couldn't afford, enough of those type of supplies and give them to them. That's the type of man he was. And when the eulogy was over, there was an ovation. Now, wow. Guys, you tell me how many, and I'm not trying to sound cryptic, it's a kind of glass half full type of scene, because funerals are never fun things, and obviously we're honoring people that everybody cared about. But to have an ovation for a eulogy, I don't think in my entire lifetime I've ever experienced that. I don't know if you guys have either.
Never for me.
That's extremely touching. The number of lives he touched, was reflected by the who's who of the hockey world, who, put their own lives on hold to attend the funeral, as you said, Zeiss. And I'm sure, obviously when David got up there to give that eulogy, he wanted everyone to know the man, off the ice, and just who he was as a father and who he was as a husband. And I know all the amount of times that I've spent with him at Central Scouting's final meetings, just sitting with him and rehashing the old times and him explaining what so-and-so meant to the game was really special. And it's times like that I'll never forget. And I'm sure you had that opportunity to sit with him and discuss, those type of events as well. But the one thing that struck me, too, in a story that you wrote on October 30th, Zeiss, I know Mr. Gregory signed defenseman Börje Salming as a free agent in 73 under the recommendation of Leaf scout at the time, Jerry McNamara. And in that story, you mentioned how Salming, started to cry, saying that, Mr. Gregory was like a second father to him. Can you kind of describe for everyone what that conversation was like? I mean, I'm sure for you personally, it hit the heartstrings there for you.
No, Mike, I mean, you're exactly right. And I had called Börje a couple days earlier just to let him know that Mr. Gregory wasn't doing well. He had talked to him a couple weeks before, and you could sense the emotion in him. And then you make that, I said, Börje, I will keep you updated if something happens. And he said, please do. I would like you to do that. And so you make that call, and here's this man, Hockey Hall of Famer, one of the first Europeans to ever play in the National Hockey League. And to hear him start to cry, start to weep, just the raw emotion coming out. And as Börje pointed out, it's not like the Swedish players today come out. I mean, they obviously know the North American lifestyle. There's other Swedish players around or executives. Borja came to a new country, a new language, a new everything, including, let's face it, a new game. Because back then, Swedish players were targets, okay, for other players around the league. They wanted to test whether these guys, and Inga Hammerström, a forward, was also signed at the same time, a Swedish forward. They wanted to test to see if these guys could cut it. And to hear Borja say it, Mr. Gregory was always there, whatever you need, if it's getting tough, okay, the language, things like, you know, the culture, the food, anything. If you're worried about what's going on the ice, if you just need to emotionally unload, I am here for you. And, you know, when you think about it, and Borja Salming was coming into such a new and a different world, you can very much understand why he would think that Mr. Gregory was a father to him, a figure to him. I think when you listen to him, the emotion and his voice crackling and the tear, you could, sobbing, that's not something that you just say in the moment or something like that. That is pure raw emotion. And let's face it, guys, that's love from the heart. And that's the way that not only Borja, but a lot of people felt about Mr. Gregory.
You're right about that, Zeiss. A lot of people had very strong feelings for Mr. Gregory. But I want to go back to, you were there for the funeral service, and you mentioned Shanahan and Yzerman and Holland that were there. But there were a lot more hockey people there. I'm sure, when you get that many guys around, there's a lot of campfire stories to get told. Were there any that you can repeat that you either hadn't heard before or that can sort of give more of an insight into who the kind of person and the kind of man, the kind of hockey person that Jim Gregory was?
There weren't really, there wasn't specifics in that way, in terms of, there was this night that this happened or that night that that happened, which I also found kind of interesting, because instead of these little anecdotes, they all talked the same way. It was almost like somebody had been handed a speech. They had handed out speeches to all these guys saying, you know what, whenever I was down, Jimmy was there for you. He never acted bigger than anybody else, from the ticket seller to the guy working the concessions. And it was fascinating. After the sixth or seventh time of hearing that, you start asking people, has this been synchronized that you guys have the same answers? And, I was just saying it tongue in cheek. But they all would laugh and say, no, that's just the effect that Jim Gregory had on you. And so, you got a lot more insight from people such as, David, his son, telling him what he was like away from the rink. That was more of a glimpse into Mr. Gregory's life. But, all anybody would say is, what a great person he is, how he touched their lives in the way that they did. And guys, start thinking about the people that were there. And I mentioned those, and John Davidson, and Gary Bettman was there. Dave Andrews, the commissioner of the American Hockey League, was there. But some of the players, like Daryl Sittler and Frank Mahovlich and Lanny McDonald, Dave Keon, who, up until a couple of years ago when Shanahan kind of, got that, repaired that kind of rift between the Leafs and Keon, he was there and just was amazing. David Poile was there, and you asked me about a little story. Poile talked about when he took over the Washington Capitals as a general manager. And he had worked under Cliff Fletcher, obviously, for a while in Atlanta. And Poile said that Jim Gregory said to him, look, if you need anything, whatever way I can help you, and this is in the early 80s, you call anytime. And what Poile said is, you know, at that time, you could be friends with other GMs, but they were trying to crush you. Okay, they were trying to get the better of you all the time. And Jim Gregory was the one guy that was there in a positive way, saying, "Look, you can call me anytime and bounce stuff off me." Mr. Gregory at the time was no longer the Leafs GM. He had moved to the National Hockey League. But to this day, and we know how successful David Poile is, he came in for Nashville for this, for the visitation and the funeral. He says that Mr. Gregory was as helpful as anybody he's had in his career.
That's amazing.
It's, Mr. Gregory always took the time to say hello, right, Zayas, share a story. And knew when to offer a pat on the back for a job well done. That's something he did constantly with me. He enjoyed very much sharing meals with family and friends and was a real, real gentleman, an inspiration to anyone that came in contact with him. And we appreciate you coming on and sharing your insight and the stories with us.
You know, for me, Jim Gregory's voice will always be the voice of the draft, whether he's doing the roll call before or he's announcing, you know, on the second day every pick's name, which he did for up until the last, two, 3 years ago, I think, he'd been doing it. And that, to me, his voice was the voice of the draft. You mentioned earlier you'd see him around the office in Toronto. You know, when you think about, when you encounter people outside our circle of the game and people ask you, who's Jim Gregory? What's the biggest thing you're going to think about or tell them about when you try to tell them who is Jim Gregory or who was Jim Gregory?
Well, aside from the specifics of what he accomplished, I would put it into more of a modern day perspective where anybody in public life these days, it's amazing, and Daryl Sittler said this as well. It's amazing because people are always trying to dig up and find something negative. And as Sittler and Kenny Holland said this too, there's nothing, and there's no reason why you'd look it up, but even if you tried, there is nothing that you could look up that you would ever find negative about Mr. Gregory. There's not a person that ever said anything negative about Mr. Gregory. And when you have people like Kenny Holland and Daryl Sittler saying that, well, that's a pretty special person, because you know what? We all have a lot of warts in our lives and we learn from them and that. But you can't find anybody to say anything negative about him. Rest in peace, Mr. Gregory. And I think that's probably the best endorsement anybody could have.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Well said, Mike.
Zayas, thanks for coming on and giving us a couple of minutes.
Anytime, boys. You know that. Thanks.
Thanks to Mike Zeisberger from NHL.com for joining us. Mike, I asked Zayas about stories he might have heard that we haven't heard before from all the NHL people that were up there. Do you remember any fond stories that jumped to mind about Jim Gregory?
Well, something real quick, Adam. I remember the story Mr. Gregory told me in April of 2012 when I was chatting with him just prior to the final meetings beginning. He said to me, I tell this story and I think it sums up my situation. He said, when my son, David, was going to public school, the teacher asked him, "Does your dad work?" And Mr. Gregory said, "No, he's in hockey." And you know what? He had it right. That's he always said that. He says he enjoyed what he was doing so much. And that's something that you can just see, came out of him wherever he was and whatever he did. He went full tilt in everything. And that's what I appreciated and admired about Mr. Gregory.
Yeah, and I think it reminds us how lucky we all are to, you know, we all have friends who do different things, whether they work in an office or they're police officers or they're doctors or whatever. And my friends, I say, well, I watch hockey. So and that's it. Yeah. And it's cool, but it reminds you that, you know, we should have fun doing this. We should have fun.
And we do.
All right, well, what also was fun is the Canada-Russia series, which just ended on Thursday, November 14th. For those who don't know, it is 6 games. You get the best of the best World Junior Championship eligible players from the Quebec League, from the Ontario League, from the Western League, 2 games each against our counterparts from Russia. And it's a big step in picking those teams that are going to play in the 2020 World Juniors. So joining us from Hockey Canada, their head scout, Brad McEwen, to talk about some of the best 2020 draft eligible prospects. There were a number of them that played in the 6 games for the CHL teams. Brad, thanks for joining us on NHL Draft Class.
Good to be here.
Good to have you, Brad. The Canada-Russia series saw 5 of the 6 games decided by 1 goal. 4 went to overtime. There was a double shootout. So I guess you received a good barometer to how certain players respond in pressure moments, huh?
Yeah, no, it's leading into it, and this is my third cycle through this, and it's such a critical evaluation point for our world junior team. And, the Russians bring a really, really good team. The last few years, this series was unbelievable how close it was, how competitive it was. So it was real good. Lots of good intel coming out of it, and now we get down to the final push.
How difficult is it for an underage player to earn a roster spot for Canada at the World Junior Championship?
Well, I think if they're what we consider the best player, and there's some different things that go into that, we'll certainly invite and give an opportunity. I think in the past, it's been a little bit of an older tournament, a 19-year-old tournament. I think that's well documented. But I think the last few years, and you look at the success of the Finns and the Swedes and some other things that the guys have come over, teams have come over and done real well, the countries, even the U.S., I think we're taking the approach that we've got a certain way we want to build the roster, and age isn't as big a factor. We want the best players, and that means, the best players to fit what our coach needs to what he feels to be successful, and obviously skill, that is one of the attributes. So we're not closed-minded when it comes to age, and certainly I think we have some good options with younger guys this upcoming year.
Brad, a couple of those younger guys are defensemen. Some really good 2020 draft-eligible defensemen that you had throughout the six games. Justin Barron, Jeremy Poirier, Xavier Simoneau played for the Q. Jamie Drysdale of Erie played in the Ontario League. Braden Schneider played in the Western Hockey League games. Was there one or two guys that stood out, maybe either exceeded expectations or really raised their stock in your eyes, the eyes of Dale Hunter and his coaching staff, guys that could really be in the running for have a legitimate chance to make this team for the World Juniors?
Yeah, and that's fair, because I thought some of the younger guys, the draft-eligible guys, were as good and had an impact in the games that were played. And, again, I think defense is an area on our team where we do have some older, we got some returning guys, so it might make it a little more difficult for the younger guy. And again, I'm going against what I said a little bit, but I think we've got real good guys coming back. But you look at Barron in Quebec, I thought he got better in the two games as it went along. Poirier, we've had him in our program and has played well for us. Look at Drysdale. I thought Jamie was really good in the two games. In Ontario, really good. Schneider, I thought, out west, a late birthday, 0-1, had a good series, and he had a good World 18s for us. So, when you look at the whole body of work, certainly the national team resume, all those kids have had some touches with the program and had some success. Their club teams, the way they're playing, they're certainly guys that we have to consider as we put the roster together for camp, for sure.
Brad, Ford, Dawson Mercer, can play the power play, can play the PK, very versatile kid. He's a good checker, likes to check, forecheck. Recently upgraded from a B to an A on Central Scouting's November Players to Watch List. Do you think the right-handed center represented himself pretty well? I mean, he had two goals and assists, 3 points for you.
Yeah, no, I thought Dawson played real well. And probably, I had seen him play earlier in the year and certainly talking to lots of scouts and things and got good feedback. So I guess it wasn't a real surprise, but it was a surprise, in terms of that competition. And I thought the Russian team, with the addition of the three Quebec Russian players that they had, that they took out for the rest of the way, might have been the best team that we played in the six games with those two. And he really, really did well. Certainly brought his standing up with us as somebody that we have to take a longer look and really consider the opportunity for him at camp for sure.
Obviously, you had a lot of good players who played. I don't want to dwell too long, but I do have to talk about one player who didn't play, Alexis Lafreniere from Rimouski. He's probably, right now, you'd have to say the pick to be the favorite to be the number one pick in the 2020 NHL draft. Now, you didn't get to see him in the Canada-Russia series, but you did get to see him at the World Junior Summer Showcase. He's been sensational for the Oceanic before and after missing a little bit of time with a lower body injury. Obviously, you had expectations for him, and barring injury, I would think he's going to have a spot on the World Junior team. But expectations versus reality, what have you seen from Lafreniere when you've watched him, and is he doing the things that you sort of expected him to this season?
Yeah. Him missing was disappointing, more for the fans and our coaches, just to get another touch on him and just, you know, get to know him a little bit better. But honestly, we're not real concerned, you know, like... We know he's a really, really good player, and we expect him to be a big part of what we're doing this year. Seen him twice with his club team in Rimouski. The thing that really impresses me about Alexis is that just his command of the puck. He wants the puck. He wants to make an impact in the game, more so than really any player I've seen this year in terms of that attribute that he has, and that excites us. At the national team level, for sure, he could be a go-to guy. We saw it in the Halinka. You know, he's played U18 with an underage. He's played Halinka summer camp, and I thought the Halinka in a critical time, he raised his level and separated himself. So that's exciting for us, and we expect him to be that key offensive guy for us. When it all gets to going on the 26th. So I really liked what I've seen, and his club certainly doesn't take a back seat, doesn't take anything for granted, plays the game really hard. But I say what I really like about him, he commands the puck. He wants to make a difference every shift, and that's fun to watch.
Is that the one difference, Brad, from last year when he played for Canada at the U20s? Is his, you know, his wanting to finish those plays, wanting to really have the puck on his stick in those big moments. If there's one particular thing that you think, Lafreniere, there's a difference in his game compared to last year, might that be it?
Yeah, I think so. I think last year, put into a little bit of a different role, he was farther down our lineup, and we brought him because we knew our thought that, you know, from a depth spot, he could bring some offense. He could bump up into a higher role if somebody got hurt or needed a push. As it played out, he played more in a deeper role for us. And that's fine. Learned lots of things. But I think this year, he's a guy that after another season, he has an opportunity to be a key offensive player for us. And I, you know, knowing him well enough, being around him sort of events, I know that does not bother him at all or scare him off. He's got good swagger. He's respectful. I just think he's a kid that loves to play. He can block out a lot of the other stuff, the attention he's getting, and he just gets on the ice and he's kind of in this happy place, you know, like he just loves to play the game. And I'm excited to get him to camp and help lead us through the tournament.
All right, let's shift to an Ontario League player, Quinton Byfield from the Sudbury Wolves. He had two assists in the two games against the Russians. He looks like he's going to be a top five pick in the 2020 NHL draft. We had Dan Marr on from NHL Central Scouting, and he said Byfield reminded him a bit of Mark Scheifele, a bit of Austin Matthews. When you watched Byfield in two games against Russia, and when you've seen him with Sudbury, what has stood out about his play, and is there a shot that he could have a legitimate role on this team as a 17, 18-year-old?
Yeah, he's really in our discussion right now in terms of camp invite and then moving forward. He certainly, I thought, in those two games, played real well. Times I've seen him in the Ontario League, has played well. I mean, look at where he is in the scoring race in the top two, and the impact that he has with his team. I think what again I really like about him is that the it's not just the skill package and the offensive package you see. He really works hard. Like he consistently works hard, stays on plays. I don't think he cheats the game one bit. He's a real likable player, and you know, getting to know him a little bit at the Halinka and having the impact that he did there for us is all positive. So I think he's in the mix for sure. He's a really good player. I mean, the added bonus is his size, and again, you go to the bigger ice in Europe for the tournament this year. You've got to be very aware that guys have to be able to keep up in their skating, but there's no issues with that at all. So he certainly is in our discussions and somebody that we've talked quite a bit about, to be honest, and to see if he fits in.
Brad, kind of a two-part question, but maybe you can just give fans an idea where Hockey Canada stands right now in making these selections. For instance, after the summer showcase in August and then the recently completed Canada-Russia series, are there certain players that are out there that weren't invited to either of those events that could possibly make this team? And the reason I say that is, and not that he would make it, but in Ottawa, you know, 67's right wing, Jack Quinn, has come on of late as well. And are some players that, you know, weren't invited, could they be part of this team come December?
Yeah, for sure there could be. You know, I think that's, we keep an open mind going into the fall. And if you look at guys that in the last 2 years, again, in my term here, guys that have kind of come out of nowhere as such and made impacts on our team. Maybe you go to Drake Batherson for sure, Tyler Steenbergen, Brett Leeson last year. I mean, again, those guys, you just couldn't ignore the success they were having in their year. They had tremendous numbers impacting their team success. So for sure there's going to be guys that will get invited that hadn't maybe been at camp. So we keep an open mind. Again, we want the best player. We want the best fit. We want the best guy that will give us and our coaching staff options and the best opportunity to have success at the tournament. So for sure there's going to be some guys that kind of come and get invited and see where they can fit in the selection camp in December. And I think we're always, you know, we're lucky in Canada is that we have a good depth of players and everybody kind of comes along at a different time. And our concerns is just trying to get the best players possible.
Brad, goaltending is a pretty wide open spot for you guys right now for the World Juniors. You had four at the summer showcase, then you had eight different goalies through the Canada-Russia series. I want to ask about two of them, Nico Daws of Guelph, Nolan Meyer of Saskatoon. They both had really solid showings in their games. Daws played a half of one of the games for the OHL. Meyer played a full game for Team WHL. How high did they raise their stock for the World Juniors? Because obviously, you know, goaltending, especially for Canada, it's a high-pressure situation. You know, it's a 19-year-old tournament. Usually you'd like to have a 19-year-old goalie. He's got a little bit more experience. You know, but where did Daws and Meyer in particular stand as far as coming out of this series, you know, what they showed and their potential for making the World Junior team?
Neither one of them really hurt their case whatsoever. I thought they both played real well. You know, Nolan played the full game. Nico just played the half, but I thought they both showed really, really well. Nolan, you know, we have a book. He's been involved with us internationally, so we certainly are aware. You know, I think his season to date has been probably a little bit up and down in terms of some consistency. Daws really has had an outstanding year to date. I think he was injured for a little bit to start the year, but since that has really been a key cog in getting Guelph to where they are. And he's an interesting guy also. Like, he's a bigger guy, 19. You look at the numbers, they're outstanding. You look at the way he plays, outstanding. So we've got to bring those guys into the mix and at least discuss them. You know, I always say with goaltending that it's the last 6 weeks prior to us making a decision really has an impact on where we go with our goaltenders. And the past 2 years, we probably each year we had one guy that we felt strongly about going into it, who ended up being our starter. This year, I think it's a little bit more wide open. So there's certainly been guys within the CHL that have had really good first halves and continue to be playing well, and that's going to be critical for us when we do get down and say, okay, which four are we taking? That's a big piece of it. And they certainly mentioned two guys that are in consideration, along with the guys in the camp, and Joel Hofford in Portland has had a really good first half. He played well in PA also. So it's a good issue. Again, not having that one guy, this is good options to have, and we feel good about where our goaltending's at.
Brad, final one for me. Group B preliminary round is going to be a bear, right? You got Canada, you got Russia, you got the United States, the Czechs, the Germans. I guess first off, talk a little bit about that particular group in general and how much of an obstacle that will be for any of those clubs. And then what do you enjoy most about the World Junior Championship? Why is this tournament such a big event come Christmas time?
Well, I think our in reference to our pool is a tough pool, and we created that by where we finished last year and those kind of things. So we are where we are, but it's going to be real tough starts. But I think that can help our team. It forces us to play right off the bat, get things together. My experience, it's we need to play well enough, get to the quarterfinal. And my experience in international hockey, it's that quarterfinal that makes or breaks your tournament, to be honest. And you got to build throughout the round robin and get better every day, keep an even keel and where your team is at. But I think getting into those games right off the bat with top opponents will be it's not ideal, but it is what it is, and I think it'll be good for our group to face it right away, and we got to jump in the tournament with both feet, because it's important to have success in your pool. But again, I can't emphasize enough, it's all about the quarterfinal. And sometimes you worry about the matchup too much in the quarterfinal, hoping you get this team or that team. You get who you get in the quarterfinal. The key is being knowing our team, knowing your players, and being ready to win that game in the quarterfinal. The tournament itself, I just think the tradition, the excitement, the anxiety, the anticipation, it's just an unbelievable tournament to be involved in and to watch, and the emotions of the countries and how important it is to them. It's important, and how important, obviously, to us as Canadians over the Christmas holidays and to follow the tournament. And I know firsthand, being involved with our teams the last 2 years, how precious as such the players take it, and how much of an honor and how much passion that they come and excitement when they actually get to the knock on the door to say they're part of the team. And they're going to go out. One thing we know is our guys are going to go out and play as hard as possible. And as I said all along, there's a lot of other good countries. There's a fine line. We've just got to play as hard, be consistent, be dependable, be trustworthy in our situations, and we could have good things happen to us.
Well, Brad, thank you very much. We'll look forward. We got the Canada Selection Camp coming up in about a month, and the World Junior starts Boxing Day, December 26th. Thank you for giving us a few minutes on NHL Draft Class today.
Great. Anytime, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks to Brad McEwen from Hockey Canada for joining us. Now, the Canada-Russia series isn't the only little bit of news that we've had since last we spoke. NHL Central Scouting released its November upgrades to the players to watch list.
Yeah, the revised players to watch list, players that were moved, upgraded from a B to an A this month, one being Luke Tuck of the USA Hockey National Team Development Program under 18 team, has had an outstanding season thus far, was moved to an A rating. Dawson Mercer from Drummondville, a center from the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, complete type player. We spoke to Brad McEwen about him. Jack Quinn from Ottawa, right wing, also upgraded to an A. He plays a smart, hard-driving game. Connor Zary, the center from Kamloops in the Dub. Great player for Kamloops this season. He could become a dominant player at some point and could go in that mid to late range in the first round. And finally, William Wallander from Modo, a defenseman, 6'4", 191 pounds, has all the tools to make it in the NHL one day. Goran Stube really likes his decision-making, his smarts, and obviously you can't ignore that size.
I like the Kamloops kid. I got my Kamloops t-shirt on that I got a couple of years ago when we were out there for the World Junior Summer Showcase. But that's going to do it for this edition of NHL Draft Class. Mike, any final words before we part?
No, not really. I'm looking at that shirt, 1984 Kamloops. That is a pretty sweet shirt you got there.
You're jealous.
Yeah,
you're
nice.
Jealous. You can't have it.
No.
It's mine.
I'm going to get coffee now.
Yes, because you need more. Well, while he gets coffee, you can rate and review. If you like the content, give us a 5-star review. We'd appreciate it. Because we're going to be talking draft all the way through to the draft in Montreal in June. For Mike Morial, I'm Adam Kimmelman. Until next time, NHL Draft Class is dismissed.